Chapter 23. The secret? Whose secret? How dare you? Apostrophe, Gemma fell on her knees like a tragedy actress. Strike me, kill me, it is I who am the offender. It was at my house that she met him, apostrophe, him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Francois Kenstern, my cousin, apostrophe, she wailed. I suppose I stood before them like a stunned ox, for they repeated the name again and again, as if they were not sure of my having heard it. Not hear it, he cried suddenly, dropping into a chair and hiding his face in his hands. Shall I ever on earth hear anything else again? He sat a long time with his face hidden and I waited. My head was like a great bronze bell with one thought for the clapper. After a while he went on in a low deliberate voice, as though his words were balancing themselves on the brink of madness. With strange composure he repeated each detail of his brother's charges. The meetings in the Countess Gemma's drawing room, the innocent friendliness of the two young people, the talk of mysterious visits to a villa outside the Porta Tisanese, the ever-widening circle of scandal that had spread about their names. At first, Andrea said, he and his wife had refused to listen to the reports which reached them. Then, when the talk became too loud, they had sent for Wolkenstern, remonstrated with him, implored him to exchange into another regiment, but in vain. The young officer indignantly denied the reports, and declared that to leave his post at such a moment would be desertion. With a laborious accuracy Roberto went on, detailing one by one each incident of the hateful story, till suddenly he cried out, springing from his chair, and he now, to leave her with this lie unburied. His cry was like the lifting of a gravestone from my breast. Why, you must not leave her, I exclaimed. He shook his head. I am pledged. This is your first duty. It would be any other man's, not an Italian's. I was silent. In those days the argument seemed unanswerable. At length I said, Colin, no harm can come to her while you are away. Donna Mariana and I are here to watch over her. And when you come back, he looked at me gravely. If I come back, Roberto. We are men, Egidio. We both know what is coming. Milan is up already, and there is a rumor that Charles Albert is moving. This year the spring rains will be red in Italy. In your absence not a breath shall touch her. And if I never come back to defend her? They hate her as hell hates, Egidio. They kept repeating, he is of her own age and youth draws youth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she is in their way, Egidio. Consider, my son. They do not love her, perhaps. But why should they hate her at such cost? As he has given you no child. No child. He paused. But what if? As he has ailed lately, he cried, and broke off to grapple with the stabbing thought. Roberto, Roberto, I adjured him. He jumped up, and gripped my arm. Egidio, you believe in her? She's as pure as a lily on the altar. Those eyes are wells of truth, and as he has been like a daughter to Mariana. Egidio, do I look like an old man? Quiet yourself, Roberto, I entreated. Quiet myself? With this sting in my blood? A lover and an Austrian lover. Oh, Italy, Italy, my bride. I stake my life on her truth, I cried, and who knows better than I? Has her soul not lain before me like the bed of a clear stream? And if what you saw there was only the reflection of your faith in her? My son, I am a priest, and the priest penetrates to the soul as the angel passed through the walls of Peter's prison. I see the truth in her heart as I see Christ in the host. No, no, she is false, he cried. I sprang up terrified. Ah, Roberto, be silent. He looked at me with a wild incredulous smile. Be poor simple man of God, he said. I would not exchange my simplicity for yours, the dupe of envy's first malicious whisper. Envy, you think that? Is it questionable? You would stake your life on it? My life. Your faith? My faith. Your vows as a priest? My vows. I stopped and stared at him. He had risen, and laid his hand on my shoulder. You see now what I would be at, he said quietly. I must take your place presently, my place, when my wife comes down. You understand me? Ah, now you are quite mad. I cried, breaking away from him. Am I? He returned, maintaining his strange composure. Consider a moment. As he has not confessed to you before since our return from Milan, her ill health, he cut me short with a gesture. Why, yet today she sends for you, in order that she may receive the sacrament with you on the eve of your first separation. If that is her only reason, her first words will clear her. I must hear those words, Egidio. You are quite mad, I repeated. Strange, he said slowly. Why, you stake your life on my wife's innocence, yet you refuse me the only means of vindicating it. I would give my life for any one of you, but what you ask is not mine to give. The priest first, the man afterward, he sneered. Long afterward. He measured me with a contemptuous eye. We laymen are ready to give the last shred of flesh from our bones, but you priests intend to keep your cassocks whole. I tell you my cassock is not mine, I repeated. And, by God, he cried, you are right, for it's mine. Who put it on your back but my father? What kept it there but my charity? Peasant, beggar, hear his holiness pontificate. Why, yes, I said, I was a peasant and a beggar when your father found me, and if he had left me one, I might have been excused for putting my hand to any ugly job that my betters required of me. But he made me a priest, and so set me above all of you, and laid on me the charge of your souls as well as mine. He sat down shaken with dreadful tears. Ah, he broke out, would you have answered me thus, when we were boys together, and I stood between you and Andrea? If God had given me the strength. You call it strength, to make a woman's soul your stepping stone to heaven? Her soul is in my care, not yours, my son. She is safe with me. She? But I go out to meet death, and leave a worse death behind me. He leaned over, and clutched my arm. It is not for myself I plead, but for her, Egidio. Don't you see to what a hell you condemn her, if I don't come back? What chance has she against that slow unsleeping hate? Their lies will fasten themselves to her, and suck out her life. You and Mariana are powerless against such enemies. You leave her in God's hands, my son. Easily said, but, ah, priest, if you were a man. What if their poison works in me, and I go to battle thinking that every Austrian bullet may be sent by her lover's hand? What if I die, not only to free Italy, but to free my wife as well? I laid my hand on his shoulder. My son, I answer for her. Leave your faith in her in my hands and I will keep it whole. He stared at me strangely. And what, if your own fail you? In her? Never. I call every saint to witness. And yet, ah, this is a blind, he shouted. You know all, and perjure yourself to spare me. At that, my son, I felt a knife in my breast. I looked at him in anguish, and his gaze was a wall of metal. Mine seemed to slip away from it, like a clawless thing struggling up the sheer side of a precipice. You know all, he repeated, and you dare not let me hear her. I dare not betray my trust. He waved the answer aside. Is this a time to quibble over church discipline? If you believed in her, you would save her at any cost. I said to myself, eternity can hold nothing worse than this for me, and clutched my resolve again like a cross to my bosom. Just then there was a hand on the door and we heard Donna Mariana. Faustina has sent to know if the Signor Paracco is here. He is here. Bid her come down to the chapel. Roberta spoke quietly, and closed the door on her, so that she should not see his face. We heard her patter away across the brick floor of the salon. Roberto turned to me. Egidio, he said, and all at once I was no more than a straw on the torrent of his will. The chapel adjoined the room in which we sat. He opened the door, and in the twilight I saw the light glimmering before the Virgin's shrine, and the old carved confessional standing like a cowled watcher in its corner. But I saw it all in a dream, For nothing in heaven or earth was real to me, but the iron grip on my shoulder. Quick, he said and drove me forward. I heard him shoot back the bolt of the outer door, and a moment later I stood alone in the garden. The sun had set and the cold spring dusk was falling. Lights shone here and there in the long front of the villa. The statues glimmered gray among the thickets. Through the window pane of the chapel I caught the faint red gleam of the Virgin's lamp, but I turned my back on it and walked away. All night I lay like a heretic on the fire. Before dawn there came a call from the villa. The Count had received a second summons from Milan, and was to set out in an hour. I hurried down the cold dewy path to the lake. All was new, and hushed and strange, as on the day of resurrection. And in the dark twilight of the garden alleys the statues stared at me like the shrouded dead. In the salon, where the old Count's portrait hung, I found the family assembled. Andrea and Gemma sat together, a little pinched, I thought, but decent and self-contained, like mourners who expect to inherit. Donna Mariana drooped near them, with something black over her head and her face dim with weeping. Roberto received me calmly, and then turned to his sister. Go fetch my wife, he said. While she was gone there was silence. We could hear the cold drip of the garden fountain, and the patter of rats in the wall. Andrea and his wife stared out of window and Roberto sat in his father's carved seat at the head of the long table. Then the door opened and Faustina entered. When I saw her I stopped breathing. She seemed no more than the shell of herself, a hollow thing that grief has voided. Her eyes returned our images like polished agate, but conveyed to her no sense of our presence. Mariana led her to a seat, and she crossed her hands, and nailed her dull gaze on Roberto. I looked from one to another, and in that spectral light it seemed to me that we were all souls come to judgment, and naked to each other as to God. As to my own wrongdoing, it weighed on me no more than dust. The only feeling I had room for was fear, a fear that seemed to fill my throat and lungs and bubble coldly over my drowning head. Suddenly Roberto Dash began to speak. His voice was clear and steady, and I clutched at his words, to drag myself above the surface of my terror. He touched on the charge that had been made against his wife. He did not say by whom the foul rumor that had made itself heard on the eve of their first parting. Duty, he said, had sent him a double summons, to fight for his country and for his wife. He must clear his wife's name before he was worthy to draw sword for Italy. There was no time to tame the slander before throttling it. He had to take the shortest way to its throat. At this point he looked at me, and my soul shook. Then he turned to Andrea and Gemma. When you came to me with this rumor, he said quietly, you agreed to consider the family honor satisfied, if I could induce Don Egidio to let me take his place, and overhear my wife's confession, and if that confession convinced me of her innocence. Was this the understanding? Andrea muttered something and Gemma tapped a sullen foot. After you had left, Roberto continued, I laid the case before Don Egidio, and threw myself on his mercy. He looked at me fixedly. So strong was his faith in my wife's innocence, that for her sake he agreed to violate the sanctity of the confessional. I took his place. Mariana sobbed and crossed herself and a strange look flitted over. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.